Welcome to episode 6 of Credit to the Girls. My name's Lucy Watkin, and I'm joined by a very, very special guest host, and her name is Neve Felton. How are you, Neve?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you so much for the sort of 11th hour call-up today, while unfortunately Sarah recovers from a virus and a few asthma attacks over the weekend, working too hard, that girl.
AFLX fever, yeah, maybe.
Definitely, yeah. Clearly, that's what it is. But great start here today in the studio. I labelled episode 6, episode 3 in the Credit to the Girls podcast, and I just record an intro without turning on the mics. So good starts so far. Very professional for you, Neve.
The only way is up, yeah, is what I'm gathering here.
This is very true. And now, Neve, just a quick little introduction from you. You are also part of the Sin family. Mm-hmm. You are the digital assistant and also a part of the sports desk.
That's true.
Which is great. But we met doing VFLW commentary for Girls Play Footy last year.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, I feel like Troy McClure. Like, you may remember me from such productions as Girls Play Footy. But, yeah, it's good to be here. I'm a big Credit to the Girls fan, so this is very exciting for me.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad, Neve. But as always, we're going to start off with a bit of quick news after round 3 of the AFLW. And as always, we're just going to start with a quick little wrap of the MRP decisions. Quite a few this week. Quite a few.
Yeah, I thought it was I was looking at the ones through this week because I think they had to send them out on Twitter in two lots because there wasn't enough, even with the new character limit, there wasn't enough room to write all the reprimands and suspensions. And I was like, there's half the games in like to what we have in like AFL men's, but twice the suspensions. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The MRP is busy. It's getting a good
Michael Christensen is having his Christian rather is having his work cut out for him, which is good.
It's good.
I bet he thought he was like, yeah, you know, I'm just gonna ease myself into this job. Next minute, like,
but the girls, I mean, girls are here to play. Basically, is what I'm getting at. I mean, I kind of, not to say that I enjoy the fights, but it gives it like it gives it something, and it's nice to see that they're so into it, especially like playing for your team and all that. But I can't say I was impressed with Dana Cox punching
Ellie
Blackburn and then
punching Emma Carney. Emmy Carney.
Yeah, that was probably the one. I was like, you fights and like Biffo and stuff is like
it happens.
Exactly. But I feel like cheap shots are kind of like
not okay.
Yeah.
And so obviously Dana Cox, she's accepted a 1-game sanction for those two hits. And Taylor Harris, with a bit of a hit behind play, which also is not great, will accept a 1-game sanction, and Sophie Casey as well. But it seems that it's weird. There's only 3 girls that have walked away with 1-game suspensions when there is a further 5 people who are copping reprimands, and that is Dana Cox, Jenna McCormick, Katie Loynes, Cara Dunellan, Ashley Atkins, who will all accept reprimands. So busy weekend.
Do we know what reprimands do or mean necessarily?
I feel like it'd be like a warning. But as you said before, we started recording.
Yeah, there's no strike policy anymore, and they don't have enough money to fine them. So,
you know, maybe just reprimand. Just watch yourself.
Yeah,
we're
exactly
watching.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
Which I don't know. I mean, feel it, like
it
that would put me in
great
line
for you. Yeah, I'd probably feel bad.
But yeah, so that's what the MRP has dished out this week, and I think it. Two of those suspensions, particularly Dana Cox and Taylor Harris, I think will have a few big sort of implications for the upcoming round. But now on to happier news. And the Rising Stars have also been announced, and I think a very deserving nominee in Sophie Conway, who has been electrifying for the Brisbane Lions.
Yeah,
so
really, really good. I think it's been – there was a bit of doubt for Brisbane before the season, like in their practice match as well, getting done by GWS and everything because they were playing a young team. But a lot of their young players have really stepped up, I think. And, yeah, for Sophie to get the Rising Star, I think it's kind of testament to that.
I think so too. 2 goals on the weekend against Carlton, and was also, I think, the instigator of the now infamous shush celebration.
Oh, yeah.
Over in Adelaide after that grand final rematch. So good on Sophie Conway. And who was our second nominee?
Emily Maguire from Fremantle.
And maybe a little bit of a contentious nominee, considering she didn't have sort of the possessions and all that you would maybe expect from a Rising Star nominee after 1 round. But 2 incredible goals.
Yeah, that was so – I was with Fremantle as a whole, I was really impressed with their goal sense, and particularly with Emily Maguire, because it was her first game. She just seemed like it looked so natural and it looked so good when it came off your boot. Like you were excited and everything, and you knew it was going through. And I think she did as well. And it really kind of like sparked them up. And there was no one really doing that as much for Melbourne. So there was like, I think she looked even better, like her goals and stuff by contrast, because there was nobody down at the other end kind of doing what she was doing.
Mm. I agree. And I think also that second goal she kicked from the pocket in the third quarter, that was the game-changing moment for Freo as well. I think that's definitely the goal that got them back the lead. So I suppose when you put it like that, it's probably more a bit more of a deserving nomination that I'm giving it credit for. So congratulations to Sophie Conway and Emily Maguire, two young stars of the competition. Well, before I move on, Emily Maguire also has gotten a Rising Star nomination on her debut game. So that's quite an achievement as well. Yeah. So congratulations even more. But now we're going to go to an issue that's sort of been like, it's been strange. It's been a strange one because I feel like we didn't have this issue last year, but I feel like a lot more of the AFLW games were played during the day.
Yeah.
And this is Carlton and Icon Park's lighting issue. Have you been to any of the games at Icon Park this year?
I haven't yet because I'm terrified of the car park.
Okay,
pretty much. I'm terrified of the parking situation. But I've been there before, but I haven't been definitely not to a night game.
Mm.
And I think you're right, there have been more games at night at Icon Park this year, because I know like the Bulldogs Carlton game was started at like 11 o'clock in the morning and stuff like that. They've pushed the games further back, I think. But I don't remember it causing an issue last season. So it's funny that it's like come up now, but also it makes sense that it's come up now.
Yeah, and that is not good. And it's been, and the last two games there has definitely been an issue with that lighting. Like I was there on Saturday night, and when I read that they were sort of talking about it being an issue, I was like, yeah, I can definitely see that, because it's sometimes very, very hard to see the other side of the ground. And when you compare it to maybe Witten Oval under lights, it's sort of, it doesn't really compare. And I think I read someone say, I think it is very much an ambition of Carlton to become that Icon Park, to become sort of the home of women's football.
Yeah.
You need those infrastructure.
Yeah, it seems like a weird oversight. And at Witten Oval, the only thing I've found is that when the lights first come on and it's still a bit light, if you're sitting up in like the grandstand, they kind of shine a little bit in your eyes. But if you're watching the game, it's pretty, like, you can deal with it sort of thing. And it doesn't affect what you can see on the, like, on the field. And I don't think it affects it for the players, like, because it's even. It's just like, oh, that's a bit, like, distracting. But, like, I can, the football is so good. How can I get distracted?
You said it.
And so, I think it's odd that they haven't been able to do that, given that Icon Park is more of, like, a stadium as opposed to Witten Oval, where they could, because, I don't know. It just seems odd.
It does.
It hasn't been budgeted for or even taken. No one's kind of figured it out until now. But also they've been saying that they might be able to do it for the JLT games that are going to be there, because there's going to be more players on the field.
Which is a bit, I think that's a bit of a stretch for an argument.
Doesn't make any sense. There's two more. I mean, yes, there are more players in the field. Like, I'll give them that. But like, there's
four
two more
players like in total.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, four
on
more players
side,
in total.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can, like, it's all about being able to see the ball. It's not about the number of players. And sometimes it's even hard to see the Carlton players because they wear that
navy blue. Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's definitely something that needs to be addressed in the future, like even for the quality of the game as well.
Exactly. And for broadcasts looking better. And it just makes, if everything looks better, like in terms of like, like aesthetically and lighting and stuff like that, the whole spectacle looks better.
That is true. And there is studies about that, in case if you didn't know, about women's sport seeming inferior because the broadcast quality isn't as good as the men's. So men's sport may not be as exciting as women's sport, but because the broadcasts are more themselves are more exciting, then the sport itself seems more exciting.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a whole issue, you know. It's also like the argument that was put up for the grand final debacle last year, where they had to play at Gold Coast Stadium, and it was like classic relegating the women to the
As a curtain raiser sort of thing.
So, you know, always political women's sport. but now to the round three quick wrap, and I think this round there were so many exciting games this round, so many good things to come of this round, and a few upsets that I don't think a lot of people were, like, probably expecting, but no. I think the results that have happened have sort of kept the competition open, which for a person like me who doesn't have a team yet to support, sort of makes it more interesting, like, not that to make it more interesting, but sort of makes it a bit more competitive that there are spots on the line now.
Yeah, and I think for people whose teams, like, are, or whose clubs have a team in the competition, it's better as well, because you feel like, I mean, the good thing about AFLW being short is that it makes it so exciting. Mm. But if you lose too many, like, you lose those first three rounds, two rounds, like, Collingwood have had a lot of trouble. I feel like as a Collingwood fan, I'd be a bit out of it, but most people, because it is, like, most of the teams have won two, lost one. It's like, oh, man, like, who...
Anyone can...
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone can
and it's more
here.
Of an incentive as well to score heavily because you need that percentage boost. So, you know...
That is a really good point.
Could have put that actually, in the memo, but... yeah, so I think, yeah, people will... It'll be... You'll be playing more attacking because you've got to win, number one, but you have to start... Well, we were playing... Sorry, let me try that again. Playing a bit more defensively because you've got to win and protect the lead. But now if it's more about like getting your percentage up, there's more like you'd want to kind of defend leads but make sure you've got a big one in the first place.
Definitely understand that one. And that's what we saw Melbourne have to do last year in their final round against Fremantle. They needed to score heavily to get that percentage boost, and they did do that. So that is what could happen in the final round. So as Niamh said, we could be looking at some attacking football in the rounds to come. But first off, it was two big blockbuster days of AFLW. Two games Saturday, two games Sunday, and it was all kicked off by Adelaide defeating the Bulldogs. And I almost wanted to write Aaron Phillips defeating the Bulldogs.
Yeah, it did feel a bit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, as soon as she kind of got into it, she just... the rest of Adelaide went with her. And I was like tempted to make like a comment being like, oh, you know, without Aaron Phillips, like, what do they do? But like kind of without the without Katie Brennan, one of the Bulldogs do as well, as we saw last season. So it was kind of a bit, it's kind of like that linchpin. You kind of like take it out and everything's going to fall in on it.
But then I think also in saying that it was sort of maybe Aaron Phillips versus the Western Bulldogs, you also cannot understate the influence of Ebony Marinoff sort of being able to slot back into her usual role for the team, and she played her best game of the season so far because of that, I reckon. And also Chelsea Randall as well, being able to once again employ her usual role down back. And I also think thought Jenna McCormick was also very lively and was a spark that Adelaide definitely needed.
Yeah, because they don't have to kind of compensate for not having Erin Phillips there. And I guess the thing is that because she is like so good, when she's gone, everybody else has to cover so much more, as opposed to like a player who's still good but like isn't as crucial. You don't have to kind of compensate as much for them. So, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, she's so good. I think Paul Grove said in the post-match, like, if that's Aaron Phillips, like, not at 100%, like, God help us or something like that, because what's she going to be like when her quad's completely better? Because... as a Bulldogs fan, seeing her line up at full forward to start off the game, we were like, oh, this is fine. Like, me and Dad were like, no worries. Like, she's at full forward. This is all good, blah, blah, blah. Like, Perkins is in the middle. They'll kind of chop and change, whatever. And then all of a sudden, she just lit it up. And it was scary. Like,
it was scary.
Genuinely scared.
So beware to all the teams out there now who still have Adelaide to face.
Yeah.
Because it seems like Aaron Phillips is going to still become a mainstay of this competition.
Because I think, Libby Birch did a good job at the start of the game, but I think Phillips just wore her down towards the end and she couldn't keep up, which is fair enough because she's like the fittest woman in the country.
For me, I thought the Libby Birch, Aaron Phillips matchup was an odd one.
Yeah.
Just in terms of size and footballing ability.
Yeah.
Libby Birch off the back of a Rising Star nominee, so you cannot bring down her talent. But you would think that you would want an experienced defender like Hannah Scott maybe lining up on Aaron Phillips.
Yeah, I feel like... Oh, sorry to interrupt. Okay. But I think with Libby Birch, she's a really good defender, but her like football skills aren't as good as her defending skills, if that makes sense. And so she could stop Aaron Phillips getting the ball, but then when she got the ball, she'd get tackled or something like that would happen. Like, she'd kind of fumble it a bit or something like that. And then once Aaron kind of got off the leash, she didn't have that defending side to her game as much either, so it kind of looked worse than it was. And with Hannah Scott, I feel like she works so well to rebound the ball and, like, get it out and take, like, those kind of, like, clutch marks and stuff like that. It's like if you put Hannah Scott on Aaron Phillips, you lose a lot of what Scott can do, yeah, sort of thing. But at the same time, like, Aaron Phillips just got off the leash and, like, we didn't have anyone there to kind of, or I don't know if we decided and it wasn't working what to do, or we just kind of kept trying to keep Birch on her, but it didn't really work.
No. But I think Western Bulldogs, I think they should come away from that game feeling pretty, I think, optimistic about the future. The only thing that is a bit of a downer for them is that they lost Katie Brennan to injury in the final moments of that game. And she's had scans on her ankle and they're hopeful she will return before the end of the season. But
it could be similar to last season. Exactly. And that she just, like, does so much recovery but just hasn't get back, which is
a shame. But just can't get back. And I think the Western Bulldogs will be hoping that she will be back on the park. And now to the second game of the round, which was Carlton and Brisbane. Brisbane running away with that one. And I think this year, despite their loss to the Western Bulldogs, Brisbane, which I feel, you know, is okay now because most teams are sitting 2-1, they're very much still in this. Brisbane once again silencing the doubters again. I think after they lost to Western Bulldogs, I was kind of like, oh, you know, this could be the one that sort of tips Brisbane back towards not replaying that grand final. But in this display against Carlton, I was like, dominant. A very, yeah, very, very dominant performance from the Brisbane Lions over Carlton. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, definitely. I think they looked like they were more in control and they could kind of control what Carlton were doing as opposed to kind of it being fought evenly and maybe like Brisbane even just like getting on top. But it was more like, yep, we've come to play. This is what we're going to do. And they did it, sort of thing.
And huge sort of differentials in the biggest stats of the game. And that's like they outnumbered Carlton in disposals, 217 to 173. And contested possessions were pretty even, so, you know, it was still hard fought. But I think the disposals in of themselves, that sort of big discrepancy, just shows that Brisbane just controlled so much of that game.
Yeah, and I think with the contested possessions as well, like, they'd be fighting for the ball, whatever, but it seems like Brisbane would have got a lot more just clean, easy possessions that they weren't being, obviously, like, contested, like, and with marks and stuff like that as well.
I thought that the pace of Brisbane is what really sets them apart. Caitlin Ashmore played a great game. Nat Exon, obviously, from Carlton as well. And Kate McCarthy as well excelled in this game because it seemed they had so much space to run and carry and bring it into the forward line. And Sabrina Frederick-Traub, as not influential as she usually is, still was getting it forward for those pacier players, and we definitely saw them take advantage of it. And I think a big shout out has to go to the Brisbane defence as well, which I thought sort of wasn't at their best against the Western Bulldogs, and you could tell from those the Izzy Huntington 2 goals and Katie Brennan's performance as well, but really picked it back up to really quell the influence of Darcy Vesio and Taylor Harris.
Yeah.
So definitely, hats off to Kate Lutkins and Leah Kasler for their performances.
Yeah, well, it was on Leah Kasler that Taylor Harris got her suspension, yes, wasn't it? So obviously frustrating down there.
Very like, frustrating.
Not only doing a good job, but kind of annoying. Like, I think Harris must have known she was doing a pretty good job.
Yes, I think Taylor Harris definitely knew that, but once again, a dominant display by the Brisbane Lions. I think we'll talk a bit more about Carlton's performance when we discuss the upcoming game against the Western Bulldogs because I personally think it's going to be a hard one for Carlton to win. But anyway, moving on now to GWS getting their first win of the season against Collingwood. So this was kind of a tough game in that both teams were coming in, no wins yet, but one team was always going to come away with a win, which was going to be very disappointing for the other side.
Yeah, I think so. It's hard as well because I really want Mo Hope to do well, but I really want Collingwood to do bad just because of the ABC anyone but Collingwood rule. But like, I'm trying to think of how to quantify this nicely. But yeah, Collingwood just don't, like, nothing kind of gels for them, I don't think.
Yeah.
And like, on paper, their forward line looks great. And I was really expecting more from Jasmine Garner this season, especially she did so well in the VFLW. She did so well in the State of Origin particularly. And then I haven't really seen – I thought, like, her being so good would take both like external and then on field, like defensive pressure off Mo Hope, and the two of them could kind of like work in tandem to give the other one space and opportunity, but it just hasn't really happened. And also I think for GWS there was a big incentive because Heath Shaw, one of their assistant coaches, I believe, said he would buy everyone dinner if they beat his old club. So, I mean, I know that I could probably pull out a pretty good performance if I was getting free dinner.
But true, especially from Heath Shaw as well. But it was I think you're right when you say that nothing's gelling for Collingwood, because in my opinion, they move the ball really well. Like they hit up short targets really well. They seem to find it, but once they try to get it into or penetrate the forward 50, they just can't. And there's, like, as you said, Jasmine Garner hasn't really played to expectations. I think she's worked well now playing a bit more forward. Like, she does come forward up the ground a lot, which is great. But when you compare sort of their Collingwood's forwards to the performance of GWS's forwards, such as Phoebe McWilliams, who I always think her and Tegan Cunningham are the two top key forwards in the competition
at
the moment. You're sort of like, what's the answer for Collingwood? Like, what is the answer for Collingwood?
Yeah, it's odd.
It's odd because, as you said, just nothing is gelling right for them. But GWS, on the other hand, very dominant performances once again by Alicia Eva over her old team. Phoebe McWilliams again up front. And also Courtney Gum, who travelled from Adelaide over to GWS. She's been very influential for GWS. Hard at the ball, smart with the ball. And I think brings some good sort of composure to the GWS midfield.
Yeah, because she's 36,
yes.
Yeah, so obviously like one of the older players in the competition, which is like being 36 and playing football in itself, I think, is pretty impressive. And I think what GWS did a really good job of is getting people like Alicia Eva and Courtney Gum and Tanya Hetherington and people like that to be around, at least like around the club and kind of teaching the younger girls who might not have played as much or played in the same sort of like big leagues. And then having like a captain like Amanda Ferrugia,
awesome.
who hasn't played in like a massive league like the VFLW or something like that, but she's obviously like a great captain, and so they've got that kind of like football leadership as well as general leadership, I guess, to kind of help with the younger girls, because they did have a really young side last season. Yeah. I think their average age would have definitely gone up.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
They drafted for experience over youth, and I think it's worked out for them. And I think I said on the last episode, GWS, I think this year is sort of like the building year. Like, where a lot of teams would have come in with a few little changes or whatever, this year they're almost a completely new side.
Yeah, they really had a plan.
Exactly. They've got a plan, and I think we may not see it really gel this year, but definitely next year.
Yeah.
I would expect to see very little change at GWS and for them to almost.
Yeah, it's like
dominate.
Last year was this is the first year, we'll see how it goes. And then it was like, right, this is what we need. This is what's happening now. So that's cool. And I think Alan McConnell is doing a really good job. Like, by all accounts, like, the players love him and he does, like... Yeah. And I think they interviewed him probably for, like, afl.com.au, and he was saying about how the women's is, like, how he used to, when he was coaching, like, as interim for Fitzroy in the 90s, because, like, they've all got jobs. And he's like, it's so good to see them come after work and, like, be criticised and, like, pulled apart for, like, 2 hours at training and, like, pushing through it. And, like, you know, they'd have, like, match committee meetings with pizza like they used to and stuff. And so he sounds like he's having a great time. And I think the GWS players seem to, like, really get on well with him. And it's just – it's funny. I have such, like, a warm feeling in my heart for the women's GWS team, but I don't feel that for the men's one. I'm like, oh, bloody expansion team. And the women's one, I'm like, I'm so happy for them. Like, what a heartwarming story. So, yeah, all power to them.
So true. And I think – so GWS come away with their first win of the season and some very promising signs for them. And now Frio. Defeating Melbourne.
They look like the Freo everyone thought was going to happen last season. When everyone was saying, oh, you know, these are going to be the premiers, blah, blah, blah. Like the, is it, how do you, because I know, like, Warful, I want to say, the women's league.
Oh,
Warful, is so strong and, like, all this sort of stuff. But, I mean, they got heaps of their, like, WA women pinched. And, I mean, they got Kelly Gibson back, but she hasn't been playing or anything. But they looked... They look strong. They hit targets really well. Like I was saying earlier with Emily Maguire, like, their goal sense looks incredible. Like, they were kicking some, like, freak goals.
And that was the difference, I think, between Melbourne and Fremantle. Was Fremantle used all of their opportunities, whereas Melbourne seemed to waste a lot.
Yeah.
Which was probably the difference.
Yeah, there was a lot more turnovers, I think, for Melbourne, and they just looked a bit... I think they thought they were... Not to say... I don't think they came into it being like, yeah, we're going to win, this will be easy, like, we'll hop over to Perth, take the W, and then head on home. But I think they didn't expect how strong Fremantle was going to be and how much... Like, how hard they would come at them. Because I think... when they were kicking certain goals and they're doing that sort of thing, they just didn't know what to do. And, like, watching on the broadcasts, like, some of their faces were kind of like you'd see the Freo girls celebrating, you'd kind of see the Melbourne girls, like, looking around, like, a bit sort of, okay, like, what are we going to do now sort of thing. And, yeah, it was just, but, I mean, Freo looked spectacular. And I think I was saying before we started recording as well that I thought the Freo crowd had a lot to do with it, because they were right behind, like, every single, like, they dropped a mark and you'd hear this, like, huge sigh, or they'd make a really good kick and everyone would go nuts. Like, I think it really helped having that really strong...
That support, especially after Optus Stadium last week as well.
And with Melbourne as well playing it, like, they've been playing in Victoria, and I think a lot of people have picked Melbourne if your club isn't in the AFLW. Like, oh, I live in Melbourne, so I'll turn up and support Melbourne. Like, they've got Daisy Pierce and all that. And so I think for them, having a crowd that's, like, basically, like, zero supporters would have been more, like, confronting as well.
I feel that. And I know this is the very early thing to say, but I also don't think Melbourne travel well. Like, they lost two away games last year as well. But I think a very interesting stat for this game was that Fremantle won the clearances 28-11. Which is a pretty big deal when you think of Melbourne's midfield. And I know I was watching the broadcast today and Shiloh Curtis was sort of like, I think this was during the second or third quarter when Fremantle were obviously leading. And she said, you know, if you were Melbourne, you wouldn't think that was such a big deal.
Because you have the outside.
Because you have the outside and whatever. But some of me just thinks that, like, losing clearances that much just means that Fremantle did a very good job of shutting down that very influential or usually influential midfield.
Yeah, definitely. I think if it was like maybe like 25-20, you'd be like, oh, that's okay. Like, they've got the outside players. But like double
almost
the clearances.
Over double.
Yeah, over double the clearances doesn't matter how good your outside players are, because obviously your inside players aren't doing that much.
Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, there's much to be said about getting the ball, isn't there?
Exactly, because Fremantle are clearing it out. They're not going to be like, oh, and here you go, Karen Paxman.
But also something very startling is that Melbourne took 11 marks inside 50 and Fremantle took 2. But we have 4 goals, 7 for Melbourne, and 6 goals, 0 for Fremantle. So it just shows how important it is to be accurate with your goal kicking.
Yeah, no way.
I know. So that's a pretty damning statistic for the Melbourne Football Club, and they'll definitely be looking
goal kicking drills this week. Yeah, training. I think so.
To sort of pick that up. But now, quickly before we move on to the round 4 preview, we're going to do a quick player of the round. And we've said enough about this woman, but I've given 3 votes to Erin Phillips for her game match winning performance. I've given 2 to Alicia Eva to just pick herself up against her old side and dominate down at the Holden Centre to help GWS their first win. And 1 vote to Ebony Antonio, who almost played like a woman possessed to help make sure Freo got over the line, and also kicked an amazing goal from like just under 50 metres out.
Yeah.
So, well, huge performance.
That was one of the... Because there was a few like impressive kicks from Fremantle, but when I was watching the game, I was like, oh, yeah, this is a pretty... I was like, she'll just send it to the top of the square. Yeah, like, you know, it'll be contested, blah, blah, blah. Hopefully someone can scoop it up. And then it just went through. And I think, like, I was like, oh, my God, like, this is, like, what a kick. And the crowd was going nuts. And I think my dad had, like, wandered in from doing something in the garden. And he was like, that's incredible. Like, it was just... I mean, that's a long kick by anyone's standards, let alone in, like, the women's game, let alone for it to be accurate. So, yeah, I think the 1 vote's deserved just for the kick. Like, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, true. So honourable mentions to Cara Janellan in that game as well. Because despite not touching it in the first quarter, she completely turned it up for
the
final
everywhere.
3. Who are your votes going to, Niamh?
Pretty similar. 3 for Erin Phillips. I think that's kind of like granted. I think 2 for Alicia Eva as well. Like, I think her leadership at... GWS, I was about to say Collingwood, at GWS has been really great. And yeah, it must be intimidating coming up against, especially at their home ground. It would be different if Collingwood had gone up to Sydney. She could be like, yeah, you're in my house now. But like, to go back down to the Holden Centre, believe it's called.
Yes,
still,
that
yes.
is the one. Yeah.
But we're just talking about Cara Delevingne, and I would give my one vote to. That's my little difference. Just because, like you said, she wasn't really there as much in the first half, but the second half where Melbourne kind of started to pick up a bit more momentum, I found that she was everywhere all the time, and she just looked imposing and strong. And I think having, I mean, like, people, it's no secret that she's like a great leader, and I think an amazing captain and all that. But like, I think if I was on Fremantle and I was a bit like, oh, Melbourne are coming back, and you kind of see her and she's like really giving directions and she's freaking out the Melbourne players a bit, and she's so strong as well, like, I think she was really what kind of like held them together.
Definitely.
In that second half.
I think so, and I think that is always the mark of a great leader, to sort of, you know, lead from the front and help the team get it done. So they're our player of the rounds. You know, give us some feedback on our votes if you're listening to this on the Twitter. And let us know if we, you know, missed anyone or if there was any notable performances that you thought. But we're turning our attention now to round four. And big game on Friday. This is like one of the first, or maybe the first, themed game of the AFLW?
I think so. I'm trying to think. It's the first one I can remember.
Yeah.
I feel like there wasn't that many games last season, which put me in me. I don't remember them. But, like, yeah, I reckon it would probably be the first, like, marquee game, I guess.
And that is the Pride game between Carlton and the Western Bulldogs down at Witten Oval on Friday night. And I think this is a fitting game for the AFLW. Sort of women's football started on the grounds of inclusion, regardless of gender, obviously, and sexual orientation. So I think this is a really, really great game. And
I think it's going to be amazing. And there's like, like you were saying, like, women's football has always been super inclusive. And so I feel like the men's pride game is more about, like, you know, it's like, it's good, like, we support you. But the women's pride game is more like just of a celebration of like all the cool people that have been part of women's football.
That's a really good way of putting it. I really like that, that I think this game will definitely feel like a celebration, that it's, we're here and it's like, this is great. Like, we've got our space now. We've had to work so hard to get here, and we are who we are, with a lot of the players being openly gay.
Yeah, like, and hopefully the men's pride match will have the same sort of vibe in years to come. Like, I think it's like an aspirational atmosphere, maybe.
I love that. And so they've got their rainbow jumpers and they're ready to go. But I think this will be an interesting game because they put down, both lost last weekend. Western Bulldogs in a lot tighter circumstances than Carlton. But both will be without their captains. Western Bulldogs have lost Katie Brennan. Carlton? Wait, did I say Carlton lost Katie Brennan?
No, you said Western Bulldogs.
Western Bulldogs have lost Katie Brennan. I'm okay. Carlton have lost Bree Davey, and also Carlton no longer have Taylor Harris.
Yeah, well, like, Bulldogs don't have Isabel Huntington either. So it's like those two, your captains, your tall forwards.
Like, both out.
Yeah.
So it may be the difference, but for me, this game will be won by the Western Bulldogs purely because of their ability to get it into the forward 50. And their midfield.
Yeah, I don't see anyone from Carlton kind of taking on Blackburn and Carney in that sort of way. I think my thing, it's like, it's really heartbreaking because, like, we got in Isabel Huntington because we're like, yep, you know, her and Katie Brennan, blah, blah, blah. And if Katie Brennan gets injured again, then we've got Huntington.
Yeah.
But, I mean, unfortunately, they're both injured. So I think somebody who really has to step up is Deanna Berry. I was really thrilled when Bulldogs traded for her, and that was part of that massive four-way trade or something, and we got DeBerry out of it. And I was really excited, but I haven't seen her really set the world on. I think she didn't have any possessions in the first half against Adelaide, and there's been a few times where she's fumbled it, and it's like, it's frustrating because I think she can do so much better.
Yeah.
And so I'd really like to see her have a big game. This is like an encouragement notice, not like a put on notice sort of thing. I would love to see her have a big game. I'd love to see Jess Anderson as well. She had her first game back. She was injured as well during the VFLW season, so she didn't play as much for Melbourne Uni during then. And so she had her first game back pretty much into AFLW. And after being delisted by Melbourne as well, has got a sting a bit. So, like, getting back, I don't think she did too badly, like, but now she'll be one of the main targets up forward because Katie Brennan and Huntington are gone. So I think those two have to have a big impact to kind of make up for it. Because our problem last, I keep saying our, I should say the Bulldogs problem. I'm too attached. I was just saying before, I got my house key with the Bulldogs logo on it now. So I'm like, home is where the heart is sort of thing. It's not good. But I think Bulldogs over-relied on Blackburn and Carney to push, like, get the ball from the midfield and then push up to the forward 50 to kick goals. And it just, like, they were exhausted. Like, it didn't work. We didn't have anybody there. So we really need to stay structured and get it going and not over-rely on certain people. But I think we have Ash Utree.
Yeah, Ash Utree's doing well. She's kicked two amazing goals in two games. And also Brooke Lachlan is sort of playing a really, really good support role as well.
Watching her, I'm like, oh my God. I flinch because she's so small and she goes right in and everything. Yeah. She's so tough. So she'll be great as well.
Bonnie Toogood as well, another rising star. She's doing amazing. So I think the Western Bulldogs, I think you sort of pull out these names and you sort of say, yeah, they're great. But with Carlton, there hasn't been a lot of players really, really stepping up. The only one that they had was really Brie Davey so far. And I think Katie Loynes, if she's not winning their best and fairest votes at the moment, then she's getting robbed because she has been their favourite player. I've loved seeing her play up forward a little bit more as opposed to just sticking to a mainly midfield role because she's another one that is so hard at it. But once again, I think this game will be won and lost in the midfield. And I don't think Carlton has the midfield power that the Western Bulldogs do. But in saying that, Carlton versus Western Bulldogs was my favourite game of the season last year just because it was very free-flowing, it was high-scoring as well. It was the first game that cracked 50 points in the AFLW. So I think we can expect that on Friday night. Who are you tipping?
Normally I go against Bulldogs because I don't want to jinx it, but I do from an objective standpoint, I think Bulldogs, because I said on Sports Desk before the season started that I just didn't, not that I don't rate Carlton's midfield, but I don't see anybody in there who I'm like, yep, they can tear it up. Like when the going gets tough, like they'll be in there getting the ball, getting it out sort of thing. So objectively Bulldogs, for my own personal, like,
how many goals?
I think 2-3.
2-3. Big.
I feel like 3 seems like a lot. 2 seems like we can probably do more.
I'm saying Bulldogs by 2 goals as well.
Okay.
Just because I just looked at the stats for the Adelaide Brisbane games to make sure that my observations were correct, and they did have more inside 50s than Adelaide. Despite not winning. So I think Western Bulldogs will win that game by 2 goals. Now, an interesting game up in Brisbane, Lions versus Fremantle on Saturday afternoon. I would be likely to go for Brisbane, but Fremantle have shown a bit of promise the last 2 weeks, but I think Melbourne's inaccuracy at goal maybe may have helped them.
Yeah.
On the weekend.
Makes them look a bit better than what it was sort of thing.
And I think that Brisbane is the all-round package of the AFL at the moment. So I think I'm going to tip Lions for this one. I'm not sure by how much. I think another, 2 goals again.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you there. I think, you're right. Lions look more put together.
Mm-hmm.
And, given that Melbourne was had so many inside 50s, if Lions have, and they're so good at getting it forward, like we were talking about earlier, with their speedy players coming through and having Sabrina Frederick-Traub there as well to at least get it to ground sort of thing, so a small, fast player can pick it up and take it in. I feel like they'll be able to get it done, and at home as well, so it's just easier for them. They don't have to travel as far.
And having
Perth to Brisbane is Australia's a big country.
And also Lions having lost their first home game as well. We'll want to bring one back for the home fans, but I just think Lions have too many great players as opposed to Freo's good players.
Yeah.
And classic just AFLW again, everyone being Brisbane, whatever. And
Just
being no, we're actually a really good team. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly right.
So I think Lions by a few goals. You're the same, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, moving to Collingwood versus Melbourne, which, interesting, 2 Melbourne teams not playing in Melbourne.
Is this out in Maui?
No, this is the one is in Alice Springs.
Oh, Alice Springs, yes.
Yeah. So the Melbourne Football Club has spent the week in Perth, judging from the Instagram, and they may be feeling a bit relaxed going into this game, you know, don't be down about the loss. And then Collingwood obviously coming up from Melbourne. Melbourne, I think, if they can fix this inaccuracy.
Oh, they'll run them over, yeah. I think. Especially having spent the week in Perth, obviously they wouldn't be going to work like the Collingwood side would be. They'll be bonding really well. They'll have heaps of time to talk about what they need to work on, heaps of time as well to just, just get more touch as well, I think. I noticed, playing local football, if in the week I'm, holding a football even more, then I end up training and playing better. Mm. I can imagine, because the AFLW players have to work, you can't be around footies as much as, a men's side would be.
Mm.
But having, the week in Perth, I'm sure what they're doing, I mean, they wouldn't be training that much more, I think, just because of, what your body's used to, but just being around, football and, holding footballs more.
Yeah.
That's the competitive edge.
I love that.
I'm tapping the side of my head on the temple as to indicate the competitive edge.
And I think Collingwood, surprisingly, I think for everyone, their defence has been their most redeeming factor this season.
Yeah, it seems odd, isn't it?
Jess Duffin back and Chloe Malloy, who are usually forwards, has ended up being a stroke of genius from Wayne Siegman, aside from the rest of his decisions. and so I think... but I'm not sure how well they will do to control Tegan Cunningham.
Yes.
This is her first season of AFLW, and she's probably, as we said earlier, aside from Phoebe Williams, the premier tall key position forward of the competition. Now, she dropped more than quite a few marks on the weekend against Freo. So I feel like that's her part of her game that is lacking at the moment. But I can't really see Collingwood quelling her influence, and also the speed of Alicia Newman is something that is
she's amazing,
quite
she's
a sight so to behold. And Melbourne also being a fast team as well on the outside, Collingwood having the oldest list, I just feel that it's just stacking too much up against Collingwood.
Yeah, their backs are against the wall, as to use the old cliche.
And for a team that has not won a game yet, coming up against Melbourne is not something that you would be looking forward to.
No,
as well,
it's like the worst scenarios. Travel, Melbourne, you haven't won yet.
It's just,
what are you supposed to do?
As you said, backs against the wall. And with that, Melbourne, 3 goals.
Yeah, I reckon at least 3.
Yeah.
It should be at least 3. It 3 goals from one player. Yeah. And then 3 goals from another one.
it should be about at least 3. And I feel so sad for Collingwood, because before the season there was so much promise with that forward line and everything. It just hasn't...
And it seems like the other teams, like Fremantle, GWS, Bulldogs, who didn't do as well. Because I think last season there was a much more clear divide between the teams who were doing a really excellent job versus the teams that were really lacking. And I think, GWS, Fremantle and Bulldogs have all improved. There's been a marked difference. Collingwood have kind of just languished in the same sort of way that they were last season. So, unfortunately.
So, think Melbourne will get the chocolates there. And finally, GWS versus Adelaide, both two teams who got their first wins of the season this weekend.
Yeah.
So, which is surprising when talking about Adelaide. But how does GWS go about fixing the Marinoff Randall Phillips problem?
Lots of praying. I don't know, a sacrifice pregame. They just have to be really, I think, not get overwhelmed by it. Kind of all right, well, at the end, I mean, they're good players, but at the end of the day, we're all playing in the same league.
Yeah.
Just go out there and do what you can do to the best of your ability, back yourself in.
Mm.
I think they need to have a couple of plans, have a couple of players that'll... Because I think, Erin Phillips is so fit, you've got to have, two people that are going to go. But I think that's why with Libby Birch last week, it wasn't as good, because it was just the one player on her all the time.
Yeah.
And, she'll tire you out. So you've got to have, a fresh pair of legs running in, taking her on sort of thing. And that way you can try and, flip it and wear her out instead.
Yeah.
I think they've got to stop Marinoff, getting into it too much, I think. If you can try and pull her out or push her out or whatever from where the ball is, that'll really help, because she's good at I think Marinoff does a really good job of not only getting the ball herself but letting other people get it. She's good at using her body and everything like that, and she tackles like a maniac, so you've got to make sure she's away from your teammates and away from the ball,
from the contest as well.
Then I don't know, hope that Chelsea Randall has a bad game.
Chelsea Randle is such a versatile player. I feel of all of them, she may be the hardest one.
Yeah, because that's the thing. If you kind of like, yeah, lock her down in one spot, I reckon Bet Goddard would be like, all right, we'll go back and man up one of them sort of thing.
And then she just dominates.
Yeah, exactly.
Down there. I think GWS is the new experience of GWS will do well against Adelaide. I can see the Tanya Hetherington, Erin Phillips matchup maybe happening. Put an experienced defender against Erin Phillips' prowess. And then, you know, if Alicia Eva puts on some pressure like she has the last few weeks, same as Jess Dalpos and Amanda Faruja, who has been playing a lot more through the midfield, that kind of makes it seem a bit more promising for GWS on my end. And Cora Staunton with her speed and
she's so good.
Her goal sense. Aside from her unwavering sort of contempt of the drop kick,
she's
really surprised me.
She's so. I remember I was after their practice match. I watched the interview with her mainly because like Irish accents are great.
And, yeah,
like,
true.
My name is Irish, and so I'm always interested to see how it's meant to be pronounced. Not that I think she was going to say it, but you know what I mean. And yeah, she was like, they don't celebrate goals in Gaelic football.
Yeah.
And so you can see after she kicks her first goal, like all the GWS girls like get around her, like they're so excited, and she's like. Like, she doesn't crack a smile at all. And, like, the same, it's still happening. Like, she's not quite used to it. Like,
yeah, she still sort of kicks it and just runs off.
Yeah, like, exactly. And they're all trying to get to her to celebrate. Because normally, like, after you kick a goal, you'll run up to the person running up to you. But she just, like, turns in the other direction. And so it's, like, really...
Back to
really,
business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's very... not that I think she takes it, like, too seriously, but it's cool to see someone, like, really that kind of dedicated and focused. But, yeah, it's also really just funny to see her, like, not celebrate.
Right, yeah.
It's like, it's kind of like, you know, when a team's getting thumped and they kick a goal and they're kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's whatever. A bit like that.
Yeah,
but they'll
true.
Be winning and they'll be playing really well and she'll have done something amazing to get that goal and she'll just walk off and her team will be like, come back.
Come back. Come back. We want to celebrate. But, yeah, I think this will be a lot better game than what people may think it will be.
Yeah.
I think Adelaide will still win this game. But I feel like I won't be surprised if it's a close game or if there is an upset.
Yeah.
Because Adelaide have had a rocky season and GWS, as we said, have brought a lot more experience into this side. I think GWS will really want to impress again after their first win.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think because Adelaide Bulldogs was the first game of, like, the round, I reckon, like, GWS would have definitely had a chance to have kind of watched it, like, beforehand, like, okay, like, maybe this is who I'm going to play next week, or they'll pick it apart, because there was, like, definitely a point in the Bulldogs-Adelaide game where it shifted.
Yeah.
And I think GWS would have really looked at that and been like, all right, well, how do we stop that happening to us sort of thing.
Which, yeah, because that was a very close game. You know, Bulldogs could have easily ran away with the win of that game.
Yes.
So if you were GWS, you'd be thinking they're not, like, undefeatable.
Yeah, Bulldogs had to convert
a bit
more, basically.
They're not indestructible. So I think GWS should feel confident, and I think we should all feel confident that it's going to be a great game between GWS and Adelaide. But in saying that, I think Adelaide by 4 points.
Ooh, okay. Now I feel like... I reckon... I had a really good feeling about GWS v Melbourne, and I was proven wrong because of the weather, in my opinion. And I've got a similar feeling now... So maybe I should go for Adelaide, but I'll just go for GWS by, just to, you know, spice things up, by 5 points.
Ooh, love it.
That's it.
So I think it's going to be a really good round of football, especially just because I think there's a lot on the line.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I think Lions v Fremantle will be a cracker and GWS Adelaide.
Yeah. I think so too. Because if Adelaide win this game, they could still have their season alive.
Oh, for sure.
Same as Fremantle. Come surprise us. Surprise us. But that wraps up this episode of Credit to the Girls. Thank you so much, Niamh, for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me. I hope I was okay. I notice my crutch saying when I'm trying to think is sort of thing. So I apologise. Anyone wants to play like a game at home, bingo. How many times I say it.
We should make a Credit to the Girls bingo, just like me awkward pausing and doing an awkward laugh. That could be another one. Not that it's awkward, it's always very genuine, but I just find that my laugh is very, very awkward.
Oh, no.
Until you hear someone say a really funny joke and I do this cackle that everyone
loves.
Oh,
that's so good. See?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't make...
Maybe one day Sarah will make me laugh that hard and that'll happen. But obviously, best recovery wishes to Sarah, who could not join us on the podcast today. But as I said, was joined by equally as competent Niamh Felton.
I don't know about that. Thank you, regardless, yes.
But we are on the Twitter and the Facebook. Just search Credit to the Girls and you will find us. Niamh is also on Twitter at N Felton.
Yep, N Felton.
How do you spell Felton?
F-E-L-T-O-N. I specifically do not have my Irish first name in the username because it is too much for some.
Too much. But yes, thank you so much for listening to us today. Chuck us a follow on Instagram. Not Instagram. Why did I say Instagram? A follow on Facebook or Twitter.
Freudian slip. Maybe.
Not Instagram. Yeah. Maybe I've just been really thinking about how we need to get an Instagram account. And I just see. But no, follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. Follow Niamh on Twitter and enjoy a big round of AFLW. And we will be back next week. Thanks.